those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Good morning, I'm Herb and this is Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring in someone from our community or organisation to talk about their journey or an event. And this morning I've got Peter Metcalf. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Herb.
Well, thanks for coming in and talking to me on Community Spotlight. Now tell me, you were born in Sydney somewhere?
Yes, I was born in Sydney. You know, Penrith had a hospital, but my mum went into Petersham, had all my childhood at a place called Wallachia. Went to a one-teacher school there.
And that was a primary school at the foothills at Blue Mountains?
Yes, it's most people know where Warragamba is. Well, it's down the hill from Warragamba.
And high school, where was high school?
I went to Hurlston Agricultural High School, which was a STEM school. You could do science, maths, biology. Before they were called STEM schools, it was actually a STEM school.
You went to Sydney University?
Yes. Got a Teachers College scholarship. Did agriculture, 4 years of agriculture, and a dip ed at Sydney Teachers College.
And you came out a science teacher? Science and ag
science,
teacher?
Ag and science teacher, basically, yes.
So what was it, and I ask everybody this question, what was it in your early life, in your childhood, maybe when you were, you know, 10 years old, 8 years old, 12 years old, that sort of sparked your interest in the sciences?
Probably goes back to when I was a preschooler and my dad had to look after me for a day, took me up to a building site on the edge of Wallachia, and he taught me two birds, what he called the bush canary and the scissor grinder. And I began my learning experience of birds, thanks to my dad. And by the end of primary school, I knew quite a bit about birds.
But also in primary school was orchids as well.
Yes, I had a friend whose parents grew orchids, and he took me for a walk up into the bush, which are the foothills of the Blue Mountains, and showed me some greenhoods and one called a waxlip. From there, I began looking for orchids every time I went bush.
Well, we'll come back to the orchids a little bit later. Now, you went to a posting, your first posting was Yanko Agricultural College.
Yes, down in the Riverina. It was interesting because from there, I'd not been down in that area, so I went bush, starting west of Griffith, where spring starts early, and eventually finished up looking for orchids around Tumut. So just going east as spring came in, and found quite a lot of orchids down there.
So how did you find the teaching at Yanko? Enjoy the teaching and the staff and the students?
Well, I reckon I learnt to teach there. That was, and the staff were very good. Boys were not academically orientated. Football was one of the key things for them. Then when I got transferred to Hurlston, my old school, I found that was, you know, where kids really wanted to achieve things and easy teaching. Kids wanted to learn.
So then you were posted to the Armidale Teachers College in 1967.
Yes, in those days you got seconded from the classroom. I got to Armidale to teach agriculture and science to secondary students at Armidale Teachers College.
But I think you did also with infants teaching of science.
Yes, the science staff said, you're the youngest member of the science staff, so you should be teaching infants girls how to teach science. So I learnt, went down to the DEM school and talked to the teachers and talked to kids. I remember a wonderful interview with a little girl telling me about the food preferences of dinosaurs in kindergarten. So don't underestimate them.
But a very special thing happened then, probably the best thing in your life. You met a teacher called Sue.
Yes, that was Sue was at the high school as a music teacher and boarding with other teachers, one of whom I'd done the dip ed with in Sydney. So I met her through that company of girls. We got married in 1970, had 4 children who are all now very successful and will look after me in my old age, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure they will. So the university combined with the Armidale Teacher College.
It was one of those events that didn't interrupt the day-to-day, you know, training of teachers, but the difference was that the staff at the Teachers College had one job, that was training teachers and nurses. By then it was a CAE. You go to the university and there's a much stronger ethos of competition rather than cooperation, and that was quite noticeable.
And when did you retire?
I retired from the teacher training in 2000 and had 6 months riding signs for national parks, like the ones out at Dangus Falls and things like that, and then became a community education officer, which meant I had visit schools from Werris Creek to the border and out to Somerton and other places like that. And it was lovely to meet my ex-students, who by then were headmasters and senior teachers and doing a good job. So it was sort of nice to see the products of your effort during the years, over the years.
And this probably takes us back to a previous time when national parks and other government organisations actually went out and visited schools, where nowadays it's all on the computer and armchair education.
Yes. My interest in national parks goes way back. When I first came to Armidale, one of the earliest things I did was go up to Gibraltar Range National Park and met the ranger up there, Ollie Payne, who was a fanatic on orchids. And we used to roam around the Gibraltar Range and Washpool looking for orchids.
But this sort of takes us back also before you retired to an event called EcoFest in national parks. But what was EcoFest?
EcoFest was run by the Department of Continuing Education out at the uni, based in the Tamworth office. And so we'd go out to the Warrumbungles and have a Warrumbungle walkabout. And each day the groups would be split up into the number of tutors you had. The group would go out with a different tutor. They might walk the same track, but you'd go with a geologist one day and a birdo the next day. So you were looking at the park through different eyes each time you went out. I went as a tutor. I always had a proper botanist, like John Williams, for example, and I'd go as a tutor. I was sort of learning, but I think my skills at teaching, rather than my extensive knowledge of botany, was what got me the job. One day, one of the bird tutors had to go home. And so I said, I could probably show them a few. Took a group and showed them where they build their nests and what they eat and whether they disperse the seeds and all that. After that, the EcoFest people would ask me whether I wanted to go on an EcoFest, and then I'd go as a birdo or a botanist, depending on what they needed.
And how long did the EcoFest program last?
I'd say it must have gone for 15 years or so.
Oh, right, that long.
Yeah. And people came back again and again. I used to ask people, have you been on EcoFest before? Oh, yes. This is my eighth or something,
So that does again hark back to previous times when there was actual people that were meeting each other and communicating together. And
in the real world, which tells the truth.
Well, but you do form a bond or by communicating with people.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell me about UNESCO. This is in 78, 79.
Yes. Well, a job specification turned up in my pigeonhole. I never did find out who put it there. But I thought, I've done those sort of jobs, not with foreign people, but with Australians. And so I put in an application and got the job in Nigeria, which was training headmasters to become inspectors of schools. We did that job for 18 months. It was pretty tough on the family, pretty tough on Sue, whereas I'd go off and pretend to be a science teacher. Sue would have to find the food and get the kids educated.
Hunt and gather.
Hunt and gather, yeah.
But it was only 18 months, and the kids survived.
Yes, they did. They were young enough to have sort of limited memories of Nigeria, whereas it was quite formative for me. But one of the things I managed to do, I got in contact with some people from Shell, and they put roads in, knocked trees down, and I went with them and found orchids, which I sent back to the Botanic Gardens in Sydney. That was in the days before CITES, when you could shift rare and threatened species around the world.
So Solomon Islands was another thing you went to in 83.
Yes, that was one year. 1 year, but that was much better for the kids. The kids have got lovely memories of the Solomons. The Solomons people are just so friendly and gentle, and they're really nice people. We had a good time over in the Solomons. And again, I've collected orchids and sent them back to the Botanic Gardens. There was quite a big collection of Metcalf orchids down in the Sydney Botanic Gardens at one stage.
And other little projects you did, the Macquarie Marshes.
Yes, that was sort of a spin-off from the EcoFest, and I put together some teachers' notes if they wanted to teach about the plants and animals of the Macquarie Marshes. I think two EcoFests out there at that stage. I did other similar jobs for other schools like Bundara. Yeah, teaching notes on plants was one of the things that I did as a sideline.
So tell me, orchids, why orchids? Why did they spark your interest?
I don't know why initially, but once I got to know more about them and realised that they had such specialised pollination mechanisms and hence their structural beauty, quite a lot of them aren't all that beautiful, but they produce scent rather than have big showy petals or something, and they attract a specialist pollinator and things like that. So I became very interested in their biology, more or less.
So when you came up to Armidale, though, you tell me that some of the orchids that you'd found had been falsely named. Green hoods, pixie caps, spider orchids, and somebody from Canberra came up?
Yes, David James, who was the guru from Canberra, he had people like me all over Australia who would send him specimens. I'd been naming things to the nearest name that I had in the literature. Most of them were sort of southern species. New England's been cut off by the Hunter Valley from the southern species, so they've drifted and become species in their own right. And David Jones could see that because he had specimens from Tasmania that I was using the Tasmanian name, for example, in my ignorance. And I found quite a few new species of orchid that David Jones eventually named one after me.
Oh, there you go. What is the full name?
Pterostylus metcalfii.
And where do we find that?
Ebor. Used to be lots of it around the Ebor Falls, but in the fires they did a lot of bulldozing, and there's not as many left out there now. So
describe it for me.
Grows about 20 to 30 centimetres tall, has a green hooded flower, about 2 centimetres long, 2 or 3 centimetres long, and it flowers in autumn and has flat leaves on the ground, and the stem comes up from the middle of the flat leaves.
So it comes out of the ground?
Yeah, it's a terrestrial, yeah.
It's one of the green hood.
Lots of green hoods. There's umpteen green hoods.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good.
Just to comment on orchids, they're much tougher than people give them credit for. Mm. They've got special roots, and then the ones that they grow commercially, they've got fleshy leaves that hold the moisture and the food. So they're tougher than people think. You know, the ones you buy are designed to give one set of flowers and then die. That's their commercial
existence.
Yes. Yeah.
So you bought the block out of town in 1970. Basically, you've been planting wattles since then. Now,
yes.
Tell me about the wattles.
Well, we've been what I'd call gardening for birds, and wattles are an important part of that. So I planted, I just looked at the list the other day, I planted about 70 wattles, different species, and there are about 40 species surviving, and some are thriving, and I collect seed for the tree group each year. Maybe 20 species produce enough easily collected seed, then I take it to the tree group.
So just on the tree group, you've been involved with the tree group for quite a few years.
Longer than I can remember.
Yes. Tell me what you've done with the tree group. So it's collecting seeds. Is it any other activities?
Yes, actually, the other plantings we have around the house are things like corias and grevilleas and mint bushes and westringias. And the birds and the insects cross-pollinate them. So I've got now quite a heap of seedlings that came up after the drought. The original plants died. The seedlings came up, and they were quite a few of them were hybrids. I've taken some of the hybrids down, cuttings down, to be propagated at the tree group because, for example, corias normally have one flower per flower head, and I've got one that has 3 or 4. So it's bigger and better than its parents. So that's the sort of thing that I found to be very interesting.
So do you get involved with the tree group in their field plantings that they do, or...?
Not as much as I used to. I did a lot after the working for National Parks. Mike O'Keefe, who was running the tree group, he died, and he had a fund, a grant money, that needed spending on farms. So I resigned from National Parks and joined the tree group as a field officer to spend this money on. Over the years, I spent something like $500,000 on about 100 different farms, planting windbreaks and corridors and fencing off remnants and things like that.
So this is the re-greening New England sort of approach?
Yes. And,
after the dieback and the extensive clearing that had occurred with early agriculture development across the New England?
Overcleared.
Overclearing, yes.
And I worked closely with the Northern Rivers Catchment Management Authority officer in Armidale, who had funds available for help planting in the landscape to improve the quality of the runoff from New England, basically.
Well, I've just recently did an interview with the Friends of Black Gully, and they've got a planting day on September 6th where they're basically going to be help restore the riparian area and bank stability down here in the behind us here at the station in the Black Gully Reserve, which will be great. All bird attracting plants.
Yeah, that was one of my major teaching areas. I used to take the students. This was a science lab down here where FM is. We used to take the students outside to give them a bit of relief indoor teaching.
Well, I think it is a gem in our community, not known by a lot of people, the Black Gully Reserve. Yeah. I mean, we have the Black Gully Festival each year, which has been going for about 17 years, and it'll be going again this year. And I suppose getting more people to recognise that the Black Gully Reserve here behind NERAM and the Aboriginal Keeping Place and the gymnasium is a great little spot within our city.
That's right, yeah.
And any plantings we can do will make it better. Now, go back to wattles.
Yeah.
So why did you collect all the wattles and why, what was wattles, other than the bird attracting?
Yeah, it was basically to try and have wattles flowering every month of the year. They are a legume, so they fix nitrogen in the soil, and that means that they have a higher protein content than, say, eucalypt leaves. That's one of the reasons why there are hardly any acacias in paddocks, because as soon as a wattle seed germinates, it's nibbled off by a herbivore because they're high protein. They produce protein in the pollen, and the interesting thing is they don't produce much nectar in the flowers, but on their leaves they have glands that produce nectar, and quite often these get nibbled out selectively from the leaf. So they're a great source of insects, and that then in tracks the insectivorous birds to the bush.
I've got a Acacia mernzii, the black wattle, planted on my block, and I often see on the trunks, and they've been in since 2004, on the trunks I see a lot of sap oozing out from the thing. Is that a food source for any of the possums or birds?
Sugar gliders, I think, can utilise it. And they also eat the Christmas beetles, so they're a handy beast to have. Mernzii's interesting. It flowers in summer. It's a big tree. I had three, and they had a bit of a lean on them, and they got knocked over by the recent snow. And I guess I've got somewhere in the vicinity of three Mernzii yielded about 3 tonnes of wood.
Well, yeah, that definitely the firewood is an issue. And the reason I planted at my place is that they were a cover crop for Cideroxyl and the eucalyptus mugger ironbark as they grew up. And then the idea was to take firewood out when they were mature. And I was told by a tree group early on when I did it that if you take the branches off, the low branches up around head height, when they're young, they'll grow into a telegraph pole type tree. And that's definitely what has happened because after a few years they were in, I took the lower branches out. They're now quite tall. But, they're very good. It's almost like a semi-hardwood firewood.
Well, a lot of the big feathery-leafed wattles are too big for backyards, but there's quite a number of them, such as decurrens and dealbata and irrorata. They're three. They all look similar and will give you good firewood, but they're too big for backyards, so not many people can grow those. There are some other big trees. See, they last about 50 years. That's one of the myths about wattles, that they are short-lived. And I look at many customers at the tree group, that wattle will outlast you. 50 years is a fairly long span. And there are other ones, like Acacia ingrami, which grows out in the gorges, and the other one that grows out there is one called Diphyla, gorge wattle. They are long-haul wattles too. They'll last for 50 years. And another one that I think we originally got the seed west of Gyra called Fimbriata. It's surprisingly hard wood and quite good firewood. Again, long haul. Well,
also on that purpose, the River Oak.
Cunninghamii. It's very good wood. It burns evenly and gives very little ash. So it was the preferred baker's fuel. And anywhere close to a town, the River Oaks get used by the bakers. So it's not until you get out to Blue Hole and places further out that you, or further west, you can find it on the rivers too. But just around Armidale, we had to plant them. They grow very well in away from rivers. In fact, on the highway going past CSIRO, some of the tallest trees there are the river oaks, miles from any river.
Yeah, I've got a couple in my backyard, and they're 20 years old now. They're quite big, trees. Let's go to the snowstorm. What happened in the snowstorm? How did it unfold for you, and what have you got to clean up now?
Well, you've got two factors. One is that the soil was saturated before the snow came, so there was no mechanical strength for trees, the root system of trees. And the other one was that there was no wind, so every flake of snow stuck to the leaves of the trees, and either the whole tree fell over or big branches came tumbling down, getting snapped off. I've still got quite a few which a professional arborist called widowmakers still hanging in the trees. So the wattles suffered quite badly because they tend to have branches that provide leverage. They're not straight up and down. They hang out. At the moment, I've increased my wood heap. Well, I'm increasing my wood heap. I guesstimate something like 10 tonnes of firewood from my block out of town. And I haven't even gone up the top paddock. God.
Well, I'm a bit the same. All the heads are sort of still hanging up there. I'll just nibble around the edge and let them fall down, because I'm not going to get up a ladder. And then probably cut the larger branches down and pile them around the base of the tree and let them dry out, and they'll be firewood.
I'm rather systematic. I stack my wood in chronological order, so I know where I am and how many years it's been drying out.
Oh, I'm a bit lazy, I think. So, look, Peter, I think we'll actually pull it up there. Thank you for coming into Community Spotlight and having a chat. It's been a wealth of information about your journey. And you're a gem in our community in the educating of young science teachers in your career here in Armidale and before, and all the other activities that you've done and the stuff that you're yet to do.
Mm.
So thanks again for coming into Community Spotlight.
My pleasure.
And that's Community Spotlight.
If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.